experience with us on our primary purpose. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. That's loud. Welcome, welcome. I can't believe there's this many guys that would come back to this after last night. It's an amazing thing. You're some sick boys and girls. I need to... We're going to try to go about 80 minutes, and I want to kind of cover some stuff, talking about the first step and talking about primary purpose. And I want to thank you guys. I'm so blessed to be here, and hospitality like no place else. I don't know what to say. You pretty well overwhelmed me. We were talking last night, you know, as long as I'm saying things from the podium that you agree with or you've experienced, then everything's cool. But you know, the minute I say something that you are not real sure about, all of a sudden it's BS. You know, it's bullshit. And it's like we hear speakers that just, I mean, what's a good sponsor? You know, is a sponsor somebody that's going to validate your crap? You know, well, whatever you want to do, go do it. You know, well, I got the greatest sponsor in the world. You know, that's not the way it is. Sometimes, you know, we've got to be a little tough. You know, sometimes we've got to say things that need to be said. And I was talking to a little brother earlier. You know, what we're dealing with in our rooms today and in all of the fellowships, folks, in all of the fellowships, we're dealing with spiritual warfare. And if you're an alcoholic and an addict, I think it's extremely important that you know that. And so, I think one thing that y'all need to get real clear is that when I speak from the podium, I'm cognizant of everyone's feelings, but I'm truly more cognizant of the feelings of the real alcoholic and addict. You with us? I mean, let's get straight. Everybody that drinks and drugs is not an alcoholic and an addict, for heaven's sakes. You with us? Everybody sitting in our fellowships are not the real McCoy. I mean, how many of you know you sit in meetings with people that have never worked the steps and yet they've got years of sobriety? Or at least say, let's say this, dry time. You with us? And it's like that's the guy that's telling people to take their time to work the steps. Work one step a year. Don't worry about the stupid steps, you know. That's the guy sitting in the back of the room making fun of us as little big book thumpers. We're laughing with a guy. They do it in the United States too. They call us the Taliban, you know, the big book Nazis. And you know, and it's like it's a sad thing that sometimes when I go into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or a CA meeting, I feel what's the word I'm looking for? I feel out of place in my own fellowship. Y'all know what I'm saying? And it's very disheartening sometimes to do that. Because it's the fellowship that saved my life. And buddy, I got to tell you, nobody's going to run me out of these rooms. I'm here. But it's difficult sometimes if you're not in a group. The book says that we develop the fellowship around us that we crave. And that's why we gravitate to people that are on the same page as we are. You know? And if the half measures... middle of the road sons of bitches want to meet, well, that's great. That's fine. But you know, I don't have to conform to what they're doing. Because see, alcoholism and drug addiction, folks, is absolutely fatal. If you're one of us, it's progressive disease and it will kill you. Here's the sad part. It'll kill you drunk or sober. Y'all with us? Everybody believe, we talked about it last night, that if you stop drinking, stop doing cocaine, that your life gets better. But the real alcoholic and addict in this room knows that my life doesn't get better when I stop. My external world does, but my internal world goes to hell in a handbag and I start feeling uncomfortable. More of us commit suicide in sobriety, folks, than we do out there drinking and drugging. Now, what killed that guy? I mean, we had a guy back in Texas, is a guy that I did some work with over a period of time and had about, I don't know, 6 years sober and shot himself. I mean, what killed this man? Depression, boredom, anxiety, low self-esteem, feeling of uselessness. You with us? All the stuff that the book describes as the spiritual malady. But he hadn't had a drink in 6 years. No cocaine in 6 years. But he still took his own life. Why? Because he couldn't stand the pain of what was going on inside. And see, that's what kills alcoholics and addicts. And that's what I did for 7 years. I'm going into Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. I'm going in believing that if I will finally talk about everything that's bothering me and finally get past it, that I can be okay. Y'all know the expression, if you get all your little ducks in a row, Y'all know what I'm saying? If I get the woman, if I get the house, if I get the car, if I get the job, I get all the everything I want, then I can be happy inside. But you know, guys, I had all of that and lost it. See? I feel empty inside when I've got great things going on in my life, and I feel empty inside when I've got nothing going on inside. And that's what we've got to stop confusing the issue around. That's where the treatment centers have a... I have a tough time with treatment centers. I love treatment centers. I work at one. But we have a real tough time muddying up the water trying to tell these people that they're drinking because of an external circumstance. Y'all down with this? This little piece is going to be kind of controversial. The rest of this is not too bad, but I'm going to try to get through it, okay? Is this water? Is this water? This could be whiskey, for all I know. I want to show you something. I drew up here. Let me show you. This is the little guy, if y'all can see him. This is infamous Issue Man. I've got some little buttons up here afterwards. You can come pick up a button. I also have Issue Woman, you know, for you, for being equally, you know, socially correct here. Issue Man, you know, we came up with years ago to kind of describe what this is about. And what I want to try to do is show you what the old timers did for me in 1987 when I finally got back to the fellowship. What they did was qualify me. Now see, it's for 7 years in the fellowship, nobody ever qualified me. I walked in the door, they said, Chris, are you an alcoholic? You have trouble with alcohol? Yes, I'm an alcoholic. See, I didn't have any problem calling myself an alcoholic. Y'all understand that? But I'm lying, because I'm in AA for 7 years and I don't really believe I'm an alcoholic. I believe I have trouble with drugs and alcohol. You with me? I'm an abuser, but I really don't believe I'm an alcoholic. That's why I won't do the stupid work. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about. You go to a CA meeting tonight, sit in a CA meeting, and you'll be able to identify the people that are convinced that they're alcoholics or addicts. You with us? Because they're sitting like this. They're on the edge. They're paying attention. They got their coffee before the meeting. They're right there. They got their books with them. You know, they're ready to go. You know, the other little bloke is sitting there and he's antsy and he just can't get still and watching the clock and gets up and goes for a smoke and comes back, gets a cup of coffee and sits back down and they're still reading who's a cocaine addict. You know, and it's like, God, is this thing ever going to get over? You know, goes take a big long dump, you know, goes out and smokes another cigarette and comes back. It's just torture to watch. The guy does not want to be in that room. You with me? Why didn't he want to be in the room? Because he doesn't believe he's one of us. And we do him a great disservice because we don't qualify him and find out if he even needs to be here. One of the biggest problems in our fellowship is that we think this fellowship is for everybody. This fellowship is not for everybody. This fellowship is for cocaine, drug addicts. Alcoholics Anonymous for drunks. SLAA meetings are for sex addicts. Gamblers Anonymous for gamblers. You with us? Just because you're having a little bad day doesn't mean that you qualify for a 12-step group. But we're so concerned about hurting somebody's feelings, they come in there, well, I really don't have a problem with the cocaine. And then we just let him sit there. And see, here's the tragedy, because what's going to happen is he's going to start sharing in a minute. Because he feels compelled. You with me? And I don't worry about the guy sharing a little bit. That's fine. What I worry about is the guys downstream that end up getting hurt by the crap coming out of his mouth. Yeah. Well, goddamn, you know, I just decided to quit one day and I just stopped. I was over in East Texas one time sharing from the podium, and there was this guy down from the valley sharing, and this guy had 32 years of sober, and I was the Saturday night speaker and he was the Sunday morning speaker. So, you know, and it's kind of a tough to do because they're going to take your inventory if that's, you know, that's the way it works. And so I share, and then this guy gets up in the morning and says, I don't know what that little one-eyed guy was jumping around so far. It's like, I don't know where he was ranting and raving about. You know, buddies, when you just had enough, you've had enough. You'll put the plug in the jug and that'll be it. No, but see, here's the, bless you, God, but here's the grinder. Now, who are you going to listen to? I mean, I had about 10 years of sobriety at the time. This little knucklehead's got 10 years. He's telling you got to work your ass off. You got to get in these steps. You got to do some inventory work. You got to make some amends. You got to go be of service to other people. This guy's just saying you just got to put the fucking plug in the jug and everything's going to be okay. And he's 32 years sober. Who are you going to listen to? See, that's the danger that we see. And everybody thinks it's perfectly okay for that son of a bitch to kill people from the podium talking that crap. But that's exactly opposite of what this book says. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. On 155, y'all can reference this later. Some of you got books, but Some of you heathens didn't bring them, so. Bill Wilson's talking about Dr. Bob. It's in a chapter called A Vision for You. And Bill Wilson is talking. He said, he's referring to Dr. Bob. He said, he had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. You with us? Dr. Bob knew his ass was on fire. He knew he was in trouble, but he didn't understand what it was to be an alcoholic, to have the disease of alcoholism. And that's what Bill Wilson was able to explain to this doctor, what it was to be an alcoholic. And then Dr. Bob identified, worked the damn steps, and stayed sober up to the day he died. I'm sitting in AA meetings for 7 years. I've admitted that I'm an alcoholic, and everybody just assumes that I'm an alcoholic. But I'm sitting in meetings, and I can't identify with the stuff coming out of your mouth. Make sense? That's what we were talking about last night. Do I believe that people need to share what's going on in their life? Absolutely, folks. Come on. I'm not that callous. I understand that. But I'm saying, when we come to meetings and all we want to do is talk about our war stories or the bad day we're having, we're not accomplishing a damn thing in those rooms. Because talking about that, only thing that does is alleviate a bit of guilt. You walk in the room and puke all over the table and then let everybody else clean it up, right? And you leave. Of course you feel better. And of course everybody else is just psychotic having to listen to your crap. Oh, bless him. What happened to love and tolerance, huh? So here's what I want to do. I want to show you what the old timers did for me, and I want to show you what an alcoholic and addict, as outlined in the big book, what it is. Y'all with us? And then you guys can identify. Do we have anybody in here that's not an alcoholic and addict? Maybe somebody in Kohanon, or it's just visiting.
Maybe one of the housekeeping ladies that's lost.
are you a normie? I guess. That's good. That's good. Well, stick close. I may ask you a question or two. I won't embarrass you much. Here's what an alcoholic is. About 15% of us, folks, really, in this world, about 15% of us are genetically wired like I am, like most of y'all in this room are, I assume. It's a very small percentage. Anybody in here allergic to food? What are you allergic to? Wheat? What'd you say? Get at it. Strawberries and oranges? What happens if you eat an orange?
My throat swells up.
That's too bad. That's fucked up. And y'all are laughing. She's not. Listen, I'm going to tell you, because you can't relate to that, can you? One or two people in this room are allergic to a certain kind of food. Dig? So that's. Let me ask you this question. I've asked this from 1,000 podiums. I want to see if you give me the right answer. Let me ask you one more. Take it a little further. Do you believe this problem with oranges has something to do with, say, the way you were potty trained? No. That was the right answer. But you see, I spent 10 years in therapy trying to figure out why I was drinking and drugging. And they want to know, you know, we're talking about everything under the sun, see? Trying to figure out why I can't stop drinking and drugging. This is what an alcoholic looks like, or drug addict looks like. When I put alcohol in my body, the doctor's opinion is crystal clear on this. It explains what this is about with this phenomenon called craving. Normal people don't develop a phenomenon of craving. Only people that are genetically predisposed, wired like I am genetically, develop this phenomenon called craving. You with us? And it's no different than you being allergic to an orange, not being able to eat an orange. It's got nothing to do with the way you were raised. It's just that's the genetic bullet that you got. No big deal. Y'all with us? And everybody's this, I tell you, this grinds some of you, because some of you guys have been hanging on to this stupid drama forever, blaming that for your drinking and drugging. The book clearly states, if your drinking and drugging is caused by an external circumstance, then you're a situational drunk, and you need to do some great therapy about that, and go away. Here's what happens when I start to drink. When I start to drink, sometimes the book says at certain times I can't control the amount I drink. You with us? That explains why sometimes I sit down, you know, I got a date with Beth and I'm going to go pick her up, you know, but I'm going to have a couple of drinks, you know, first to get right. You know, get comfortable. Get some courage, you know, because I'll need it with her, I can assure you. And see, because I saw this thing on her neck. Okay, anyway. And so I'm going to have a couple of drinks, but what happens is the phenomenal craving kicks in, and before I go pick her up, I've had 6 or 7 drinks. You with me? You know, if I'd had 2 drinks, I'd have gone to the house looking like John Travolta. I mean, everything would have been cool. You know, I'd have, what a stud, you know? I mean, hey, baby, you know, but as it turns out, I've had 6 or 7 drinks, right? And I'm knocking on the door, my patch is on crooked, you know, and I'm... I'm a mess, you know, I'm a mess. Why? I didn't intend to go to her house all loaded, messed up, did I? Absolutely not. I intended to go over there right. You dig? I mean, this is so stupid. People think that alcoholics and addicts, every time we drink, we turn into a zombie. Most of us in this room have had a period of time when we drank and drugged quite successfully. I mean, guys, the stuff works. When alcohol and drugs worked for me, when I developed a combination of alcohol and cocaine that worked, buddy, I'm going to tell you, I got laid a lot, I made a lot of money, and life was good. You know, but the problem is this phenomenon of craving is progressive, and as we get older in our disease, I have less and less likelihood of hitting that target. Y'all know what I mean by that target? Can y'all see this right here? If I drink just enough alcohol and just enough cocaine, I can hit this target 1,000 times. This is the right spot right here. This is where every single one of you, some of you guys that are in here that are addicted to pills, y'all know what I'm talking about. You take just the right amount of pills and you go to work and everything's great. You with us? And then sometimes, oops, I ended up drinking a little bit too much and ended up outside the target a little bit. You know what? I'm a little sloppy, you know, I'm a little funky, you know, and I wake up one and I says, God, I got hung over last night. I mean, this is nuts, you know, and I said some things at that party I shouldn't have, and I made an ass of myself, and I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm done with that. You with me? And a couple of weeks later, you know, you're drinking a couple of drinks and holding, no, I don't want to go back to that spot again, you know, I'm hitting that target again, I'm doing real good, thinking I got it all made, you know, and then there comes that day, you know, and I, no. Target? I'm not even in the same universe. This is not the cool place to be, buddy. This is public intoxication. This is a trip to jail. You know, this is a car wreck. You know, lousy stuff. But you see, what normal people don't understand is they think, well, if he hits this outer limit enough, he'll finally get his shit together and stop. You with us? Uh-uh. Here's what my book says on page 24. My book says on page 24, the almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd our mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, which tells me they may not, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we're going to handle ourselves like other people. There is the complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. How many of y'all can relate to that? Everybody keeps waiting. Well, sooner or later, she'll hit her bottom. Yeah? When she's dead. Until this obsession leaves, we're going to continue to drink and drug. It's a terrible feeling to get. Everybody understands this physical piece. Everybody except Nancy Reagan. I mean, but I got to tell you, we got some crap coming out of the United States. But this stuff with Nancy Reagan, just say no. Oh, shit. Nancy, just say no. Okay. Why? You know, it's like, God, why didn't I think of that? You mean after that last DWI, I could have just said no? God almighty. I wouldn't have had 7 more years of drinking and ruining everything. Unbelievable. How silly of me. We can get you past the physical piece, guys. It's called detox. Anybody that's been to treatment knows this. We get you past the detox. The phenomenal craving will not take place if the substance is not in your body. We got to get the terminology straight. Craving only takes place when it's in your body. Once it's out of your body, you guys detoxing off pills, that takes months, months and months, some of you. But once it's out, There's no phenomena called craving. So why is it that I can't stay sober? That's the crap we hear in meetings.
If you don't drink the first one, you won't get drunk.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. I can't not drink the first one. Dig? That's this right here, buddy. That's this word right here called choice. That's the mental obsession. This is the piece that kills alcoholics and addicts. The mental obsession. Book says, on that same page, on page 24, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable, at certain times, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. I mean, that's the definition right there of true powerlessness. Are you powerless over alcohol? Are you powerless over drugs? Or can you remember the consequences always and stay sober? Will you remember the car wreck? Will you remember the rape? Will you remember the whatever the tragedy that took place around the alcohol and drugs? Will you remember that with sufficient force to stop you from putting it in your body again? See, my experience, that's what we're asking you guys to do. Look at your truth based on your experience, not your head knowledge. What's your truth based on your experience? My experience is that there were times I could remember getting arrested, and then there were times within a few days after the arrest that I didn't think about it at all. Somebody walked by with some cocaine and I says, well, yeah, perhaps, but just a little. Always with the intention of just doing just a little. I'm the only guy out there. We were laughing about it at another conference. I'm the only guy out there I know that ever got fired by a drug addict. Y'all understand? I mean, by a dope dealer. Dope dealer used to get tired of me because I'd go over to his house and says, buddy, I need a quarter gram of cocaine. And then 2 hours later, I'd be back knocking on his door. Buddy, I need a quarter gram of cocaine. You know, he's tired of stepping on this stuff. You know, he's cutting this up. He says, Chris, why don't you just buy an ounce? You're going to do an ounce before it's all over. Why don't you just... I'm not a drug addict. I need a quarter gram of cocaine. Unbelievable. But you see, when I'm asking for a quarter gram of cocaine, I know it. Because this is going to be the last. This is it for me. The question we ought to ask you guys when you come to treatment is not all the stupid drama that you do. We ought to ask you just one question. Have you ever gone back to a money machine more than once in a night? Yeah. You're so busted. You see, normal people don't do that. But I go at 6 o'clock. They don't. Because there's a big damn service charge at the end of that thing. You know, I go back, Chris, I got $40 out. That's all I need. I need $40. And I go back again. I need another $40. And I go back again, another $40. Shit. And do it all night long until you get that little glow, you know, that says insufficient funds, you know. If I'd known I was going to do $200 worth of dope that night, why didn't I just get $200 out at 5 o'clock? Because I wasn't going to do $200 worth of dope that night. I was just going to do a little. Y'all with us on that one? This thing about choice is absolutely unbelievable. This other piece right here, this is a three-part disease, guys, and we've got a three-part solution. I got some great little handouts. I don't have enough for everybody, but we'll make some copies and you guys can disperse them. You can pass them all over England, I guarantee. But put them in the rooms and then leave. You know, don't let them see you laying them down, because you're already in enough trouble. What they never talked to me in 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous about was this third piece called the spiritual malady. Everybody that I walked into when I first got to AA wanted to do this little tippy-toe thing around this God thing. Y'all with us? And this is the problem. When I said earlier that we're in spiritual warfare, this is the reason our success rates are so dismally low. Because nobody wants to talk about this God thing. Guys, I hate to sound callous about this, but if you're really struggling with this God thing, go smoke some more crack. I mean, Jesus, you didn't have any problem out there when you were getting your ass beat talking to this higher power. Oh God, please help me. And now you're cleaning the rooms and now you're, well, I'm not really sure about this God thing. It freaks me out. You know, rebellion can be fatal. Do y'all understand that? Your right to consider this could be fatal. Millions of us have finally succumbed to the fact that there's a power out there greater than ourselves. Woke up this morning overlooking, I don't know about your room, my room overlooked the ocean out there. What a breathtaking view. Did I do that? And God did that, folks. The same power that made that ocean, the same power that caused those birds to fly, allows me to live comfortable in my skin today. This hadn't got jack shit to do with religion. It has got everything to do with spirituality. Please. These are some statistics. I'm hesitant to read them to you because so many people want to take exception when I do this because this is purely non-scientific. But I think it's a great way to see with some clarity what's going on here. In the forward to the second edition of this big book, there's a little passage in there that gives some statistics. This was in 1955 in Alcoholics Anonymous. We had a success rate between 65 and 75% were getting sober, staying sober a year. You with us? It's a pretty good success rate. You know, the cat's coming in the room. Some of them having a little trouble, but they finally get their feet on the ground. And at the end of the year, we got about 75% staying sober. It's great stuff. Early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, folks, we had tremendous success rate. And then we got real smart, folks, and the treatment centers got involved, and we had better therapy, and we had the antidepressants hit the scene, and we had a lot of cool stuff happen, and it all took us away from the one thing that was going to save our asses, which was the spiritual experience. Here's the stats coming out of Dallas, Texas. Y'all know where Dallas is? Y'all remember the movie? All right, that's where it is. And no, I've never met JR. And don't even start it. In 2003... they sold 19,698 Desire Chips. They're a little intergroup office. Y'all with us? They sold nearly 20,000 Desire Chips. We give little key tags in our Fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous. Little tokens to signify that we wanted to try to do this deal. They sold 1,582 one-month chips. Now, what happened to the 19,000 people that picked up a Desire Chip? They couldn't even make it 30 days. They only sold 1,582 one-year chips, the little brass ones, 1,385, 7%. That's where our success rates are right now. In the United States, best case scenario, you'll find about 20% success rate in all of the fellowships. Why? Because we don't qualify the newcomer. We don't tell them what they need to do to get well. We let them come into the stupid meetings and sit there and get so uncomfortable they can't stand it, and then they leave. Well, he just didn't want it. What didn't he want? An hour a day listening to you tell your fucking stupid-ass war stories? Listening to you whine about the damn babysitter? No, you're right. He didn't want that. I smell more. My sponsor says I smell more. There was a better fellowship. Let me show you here. This spiritual malady, guys, is the third piece and the most important piece. This is Issue Man up here. And Issue Man... Issue Man. You'll notice in the Issue Woman pins, there's one extra X there. This is my wife pointed out. Something about women having more issues than men. I don't know about that. Here. Here's the little guy, you know, and here's the problem. The big book describes a thing called a spiritual malady. You with us? A spiritual illness. It talks about it dozens of pages, but we want to avoid it because it brings up the God thing. We don't want to talk about God, so let's just talk about not drinking one day at a time. Big Book describes the spiritual malady as this. How about irritable? Can y'all relate to irritable?
Yeah.
How about restless?
Yeah.
Discontent.
Yeah.
Oh, that's huge. No sense of direction. Boredom. Depression. Depression is the number one symptom of alcoholism and drug addiction, folks. Fear. Tension. Anxiety. Trouble in personal relationships. Yeah. How about the one with yourself? That's a personal relationship. Some of you guys are so tough on yourself, it's not even funny. Trouble making a living. It's got nothing to do with making money. Some of you guys are whizzes at making money. You just don't handle your money very well. You with us? That's why they got your credit card. Dig? Yeah. 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 All of that stuff, see, is what makes me uncomfortable inside. And what happens, the book says, we drink for the effect. We take the cocaine for the effect. What's the effect? The effect is it treats that internal condition and makes it go away. When I do a little bump, when I do a little alcohol, I feel great. And I'm going to go to work, and I'm going to kick butt. I'm going to be the best employee. I'm going to be the super lover. Everything's good until the stuff is out of my system and I start feeling uncomfortable again. And then I got to go do some more. Y'all with us? Alcohol and drugs is not my problem. We talked about it last night. Alcohol and drugs is my solution. Always has been. And now you're asking me to leave the stuff alone. And I'm walking into therapy and they say, Chris, buddy, let's talk about this. Let's talk about mama. We laughed about it last night. Let's talk about your sexuality. Let's talk about the sheep again. You know, let's talk about your work. your work, what's going on at work. Let's talk about your day. Let's talk Jesus. And I'm talking, I mean, I benefited from it. I'm telling you again, therapy is great. You know, right up at the part they wanted to talk about my little pee-pee, and then it got to be real tough. And But what are we going to do? I mean, if that's what we're drinking over, you're fucked. I mean, you're dead. I mean, what are you going to do? If my drinking and drugging has got something to do with this external stuff, that's the worst thing I can tell you today. If your drinking and drugging has got something to do with something external, then it's a noose around your neck. Because these people may not change. You with us? Those circumstances may not change. I'm going to tell you something, folks. Alcoholism and drug addiction is 100% recoverable. And in that state of, as a recovered alcoholic and addict, whatever goes on out here, you're going to have the power to deal with. Here's what the book says. Turn to page 45 if you got your little books. One of the greatest pages in the book. Lack of power. That was the dilemma. What did it say? Didn't say alcohol was the dilemma. Didn't say cocaine was the dilemma. Lack of power. That's the dilemma. Isn't that the truth? Lack of power to deal with all these little chicken shit issues. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how are we going to find that power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. I'm years in the fellowship and nobody showed me that. Nobody explained that to me. I thought this was some kind of glorified self-help program. I'm going to get in here and I'm going to fix myself. Buddies, if you could fix yourself, you'd have done it a long time ago. I need this power to come into my life and change everything. My attitudes and belief systems are going to switch. That's what this is about. This right here. Books on page 21 and 20 talks about the specific, talks about the moderate drinker and drugger, the hard drinker and drugger, and then it talks about the real alcoholic, the real drug addict. And if you're one of us, buddy, there's only one solution for you, and that's the spiritual experience. The spiritual experience that you're guaranteed to have as a result of working the steps. Make sense? But what do we want to do? We want to come into meetings, and all we want to do is talk about this crap over here. It's the tragedy that I spent a lifetime blaming everybody else in the world why I couldn't stay sober. You're either one of us or you're not. You can't be a little bit drug addict. You're either one of us or not. There are a lot of people that are abusers, given sufficient reason. They can stop. What does your experience show you? Does your experience show you that you had significant reason to quit before now and been unable to do it? Welcome to our fellowship. Welcome. We got a solution for you. What's our primary purpose, guys? We read it last night when we read the traditions. Anybody got their book? I want to show you something real quick. The fifth tradition, long form. Everybody wants to read the short form. Long form, not much longer. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group, each Cocaine Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. What's my message? What's my message? Is it me eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas? Is that my message? This is the message. This is the message we all carry. The message of hope, the 12 steps. Let me run something by you. Some of you guys are grinding your teeth about this war story thing. We talked about it in last night's talk. Page 17 says we got one element that holds us together, and that's our war story. You with us? I could sit down and talk to any of you guys for days about the stuff that happened. But generally, all we have to do is sit down and meditate two or three sentences between us, and I know who I'm talking to. You know, you share a little bit about you, I share a little about me, and we go on down the road. You with us? It's just simple. But see, that's not what holds us together. What holds us together, what delights me, what is excited me all weekend, was sitting down at breakfast with you guys, sitting down as talking in the aisles with you out here, visiting with you about your cool lives and what you're doing out there in sobriety. That's what ties us together. Because the same solution that got me sober got you sober. So why is it that we're so damned enamored with our story? Everybody says, well, that's all we have. That's all we have is our stories. I hear it in meetings all the time. Listen, shame on me if that's all I've got. If all I've got is a bunch of scary-ass war stories to tell you, shame on me. I'm not talking about from the podium. We get up and share our stories from the podium. That's a great deal. Earl will do it tonight. Leon will do it tomorrow. What an honor to get a chance to listen to other people's lives. I'm talking about sitting in a meeting. Why is it that you continue to want to go back and share your story over and over? I don't want to forget my story. Horseshit. The book just said you're not even going to remember your own story, much less somebody else's story. When that obsession returns, you're going to go use. War stories have one place, folks, and that's in a thing called a 12-step call. We could do a whole hour just on that. And a 12-step call, you get this call, and there's a guy down at the coffee shop, and he's shit-faced, and the owner calls and says, "Buddy, can you come see this guy?" And so you sit down with him, and he's got his face in a plate of fish and chips, you know, and you say, "Buddy, wake up, you know, let's talk a minute, you know." And you start telling him a little bit about yourself and about what happened and how 6 months ago you too were trying to drown in a plate of fish and chips. And now today you eat it instead of swim in it, you know, and it's a pretty, but you share some stories and you get the guy comfortable and you get his confidence. And then you, guys, I've done this from 1,000 podiums. You know how to fish? You know, you get the nibble, you know, a little nibble, you see him kind of, yeah. And then you set the hook, and then you tell him about how he got sober. What did Ebby do? Ebby Thatcher. He got the message from Roland Hazard, who got it from Carl Jung. Dig? And so Ebby takes this message to Bill Wilson. He gets on a bus at about 6 months sober, and just a few months sober. And he gets on a bus and goes find Bill Wilson, and he sits down with Bill Wilson, and they share a few stories. The book talks about it in Bill's story. And they visit a little bit about the old times. You with us? And then what does Ebby do? He doesn't say, "Buddy, I've enjoyed visiting with you. I'll talk to you again sometime. See you at a meeting." Bill says, "What happened to you?" You with us? Click. He sets the hook. Tells him he got God. He didn't mince any words. He tells him about God. Bill Wilson gets sober. They go find Dr. Bob. Bill Wilson goes and gets Dr. Bob. A few months later, goes and finds the guy. Sits down in the garden house there in the east and sits down with him and visits with him a little bit, and they start sharing some war stories. And Dr. Bob says, "Yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about. He understands alcohol. He understands today. He understands cocaine, you know." Then what did Bill do? Click, 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 click. He sets the damn hook. He tells him about God. He gives him the solution. Y'all with us? 12-step call. When you're with somebody that doesn't know anything about the fellowship, get their confidence first and then talk to them about the program. You don't walk in the door and just start talking about God. They think you're a damn Jehovah's Witness. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. They're going to dust you out of there quick. They're not going to listen to what you've got to say. But guys, guess what? The cats are sitting in the meeting. They're already here. They're done. Now, are you going to waste their time again telling them some more war stories? Are you finally going to cut to the chase and tell them the absolute hope that this program has to offer? Tell them how to work a stupid four-step. Tell them how to make those stupid amends. Talk to them about meditation. There's so much to talk about. And we waste so much time. If they have to sit in a meeting, we fail to use a thing called discernment in our meetings. If you're in a group of guys, and it's the same five guys there every night, And you know them, and they're all buds, and y'all want to sit around and share some stories with each other. How cool is that? Go ahead. You want to talk about your fucked up day? Go ahead. That's okay. But if there's some newcomers in there, you guys need to pay attention. What are we there for? We're there to help the newcomer. And it always floors me. I'm sitting in a meeting, and there's a nice businesswoman like you there. You know, dressed up nice, and she's there in a lunch. You know, everybody's eating a ham sandwich and a lunch meeting, and she's freaked out. It's the first time she's ever been here. She introduced herself at the beginning as a newcomer, right? And so everybody goes around and shares their war stories. You got a bunch of old hairy leg guys here that just out of prison. They're scratching and, you know, it's like ogres, you know, and they want to tell all their stupid goddamn war stories. Well, this lady, she's not living on the street. She's not hooking. She's not doing a bunch of, why are you telling these stories? What are you trying to do? What's the truth? Your freaking arrogant ego has gotten in the way, and you're trying to impress her with how bad things got with you. You're not trying to help her get into the fellowship. All you're doing is scaring her off. Does she believe for a second that she's ever going to be in jail or hook on the street or do anything else stupid like? Of course not. There's no chapter in the back of the book called Into Fear, folks. But you know, if they'd been in a meeting, And some of the guys in the first, when I first got there, and I'd never had a DWI, and I'd never blacked out, and I'd never been arrested when I first went to Alcoholics Anonymous, if they'd have talked about this spiritual stuff, if they'd have talked about this low self-esteem and this feeling of uselessness and the fear and the depression and the boredom, I could have gotten down with that. But they didn't. They're too busy telling their little chicken shit stories. Go to jail? No. DWI? No. Piss your what? Your pants? No, no, no. I'm not one of you. I'm not one of you. They almost killed me. First thing we do with somebody that we're working with, the first thing we do when a newcomer comes in, we give them a little newcomer packet perhaps, we share the room with them, get them comfortable, let them know where the bathroom is and the coffee, make some small talk. But the first thing before they leave, y'all need to absolutely understand that we must qualify them rapidly. We must find out if they need to be here or not. Are they in the wrong room? I have watched thousands of drug addicts die because nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous had the courage to tell them to get their ass to Cocaine Anonymous. We believe that we're a fellowship for everybody in AA. Horse shit. We're a fellowship for alcoholics in AA. Grind some of you. If you're an alcoholic and an addict, of course you're welcome in AA. But you need to be in the right room. I was traveling in the East one time and I needed a meeting, and they said there's a meeting down the hall, and I went down the meeting and I walked in, and there was 12 steps on the wall, but they were all carrying this different kind of book, and I says, I don't know what it was, and they all started introducing themselves. Hi, my name's Joey, I'm a sex addict. My name is Carl, I'm a sex addict. You with us? And I'm freaking out a little bit, and they get around for me, and they says, what are you? I said, well, my name's Chris Raymer, I'm an alcoholic. And at the end of the introduction, they said, we had someone that didn't introduce themselves as a sex addict. Chris, do you have a problem with sex? I said, goddamn right. I can't seem to get any. I mean, you know what that chair lady had the audacity to do? She kicked me out of that meeting. She asked me to leave. Good for her. Good for her. Because the shit coming out of my mouth could have killed somebody in that room. I'm laughing about it. They're dying from it. We think if we know one kind of addiction, we know all addictions. Horse shit. I tell you guys, it's all different. Detox from pain meds, detox from heroin, detox from cocaine, completely different than alcohol. And if you're not careful, the stuff coming out of your mouth could kill somebody. God's given you some experience, folks, to use. Use it wisely, please. That's the greatest gift that we've got, folks. The greatest gift that we've got is our ability to help the newcomer get comfortable in these rooms and qualify them and find out what room they need to be in. It's our past that makes us so powerful. One of the reasons that we're having such a tough time in AA today, folks, is that we've gotten away from good sponsorship. In other words, we could do 3 lectures on sponsorship. It's a very simple thing to do, but it takes some responsibility. When you come into the fellowships, the first thing you need is to grab hold of somebody that's been through this work, that understands the work, that can get you through the work rapidly. You with us? I hear people all the time, and we do these workshops on sponsorship. But, well, a sponsor is just a friend. No, no, it's not. I've got plenty of friends. Thank you very much. I got a friend. I need somebody to show me how to do this work. It's extremely important. I don't even have to like the guy. I have to like what he's got. I have to want what he has. I'm going to read you this. This is came out in an intergroup. Some of y'all have heard me read this before. This is in the Box 459, the little AA publication that New York puts out. It says, the most frustrating thing about answering the intergroup's phones, this is in New York, says Bob R., manager of the Intergroup Association in New York City, is finding an AA member willing to take a 12-step call. Sometimes it takes up to 20 calls to identify just one willing volunteer. Some of the responses we hear when a live member actually does answer the phone, what's a 12-step call? How did you get my phone number? That was definitely a crack at it. Do you mean you actually want me to talk to someone who's still drinking? The saddest response came from a member who exclaimed, no, I can't do it. I'm busy all day. Today is my sobriety anniversary. Can y'all get down with this? Guys, in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, the entire fellowship was built on our primary purpose. We get sober, we get our feet on the ground, and then we start helping other people get sober. That's what we do. We used to be, like the tradition said, a spiritual entity, where that was our only focus. And now we've turned into a room full of junior therapists trying to help each other have a better day. I'm gonna mention something to you, because I'm gonna get off page here. I'm gonna mention something to you. Any of you cats in this room suffering from low self-esteem, I'm gonna tell you, you can stand in front of a mirror and say that you're a good boy all you want to. You with me? It works about as well as me standing in front of a mirror and saying, I do have a big pee-pee. I do have a big pee-pee. Guys, you want to feel better about yourself? I got an absolute clear picture for you. You reach out and help a little newcomer that's just walking into these rooms. You can still smell the pipe on him when he walks in. He's freaked out. He doesn't want to be there, but he knows he needs to be there. You with us? And you make that your little pet project, and you make sure that he's taken care of, and I guarantee you, you're going to see a little light come on in that guy's eyes, and it's going to blow you out of the water when you realize that the shit coming out of your mouth, the cat that was so selfish and self-centered he couldn't stand anybody or anything a few weeks ago, and now all of a sudden, this little guy's looking up to you like you're some god. Because you're coming across with some authority and some advice for this guy what to do in order to stay sober. And I guarantee you, that little guy will sit there and catch fire on this thing, and then one day, within weeks, this little guy will be sitting in a meeting reading the big book to some newcomer. You with me? And all of a sudden, you get a chance to see what's happened. You carried the message to him, and now he's carrying the message to another little knucklehead. And I'm going to tell you something. It's like watching your kids play Little League. You know, you just, That's my boy over there. You know, it's the best. Yeah. I get the same feeling when I went to Iceland and watched those young adults, those 20-year-old kids starting the fellowships over there in Iceland. With all the resistance, the same with a lot of you in these rooms who took a lot of heat and a lot of resistance from a lot of old-timers because they didn't want CA here. They didn't want the book here. They didn't want to talk about God in the steps here. And a lot of you guys have goddamn towed the line and stood for something. And you took a lot of heat. I've talked to a bunch of you that have done that. All I can say is, buddy, you're the one that's carrying on the legacies, not them. You're the one that's carrying on the legacy. That little ripple that started with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob is ever widening. And in 1987, that little ripple included me. It's included a bunch of you guys now, and it's just ever widening. We've got an endless supply of alcoholics and addicts out there that need some hope, that need the truth. But it takes effort to get in that trench. The book says a price has got to be paid. It means that you've got to get rid of your selfish and self-centered stuff. It takes effort to go work with a newcomer. No, I want to stay home and watch Channel 4. No, I'm sorry. You said you'd meet the kid down at the coffee shop. Go. It takes effort to do that. It takes effort to chair a meeting. It takes unbelievable effort to start a conference and do this like this and keep this thing going. A bunch of y'all in this room should be absolutely congratulated for the job that you've done. Absolutely congratulated. How can you have low self-esteem when you realize that you're in this great scheme of things helping so many people get well? We talked about it last night. Y'all remember that place of absolute hopelessness? That night when I took those pills, just so frustrated that I didn't think anything was ever going to work, and walked back into a room and there's an old long-haired hippie guy named Don Smith. And I break his anonymity. He's a great friend of mine. And he's had some trouble staying sober, buddies. But I'm telling you what, he took time with me that night and showed me what this was and qualified me and helped me get comfortable and stayed on my ass until I had that fourth and fifth step done. Bless his heart. He loves me enough to tell me the truth. Let me read something to you. I'm a big history buff. There's a little book called How It Worked, The Story of Clarence Snyder. Some of y'all may have seen the copy. It's out of print now, but I understand it's on the internet. You can download the whole damn book in the. It's a pretty cool thing. He describes in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, Clarence is in Akron. He's working with the drunks, and he describes. I don't have time to read it, but I want to paraphrase it because try to explain what happened. This little skinny guy, scared of everything. Is a little guy named Arch, and Arch was being babysat. He was in these folks' home in Akron, and they were sitting on him. It says his mental and spiritual condition wasn't improving, but he just wasn't drinking. They were babysitting. He'd been in this house for weeks, You with us? They were just watching him, so it keep him away from the alcohol. But he wasn't getting any better. And he was driving everybody crazy, feeling sorry for himself. Y'all know how it is. So they suggested very strongly that Clarence take him back. And so Clarence, you know, he's trying to work a step, and so he takes this kid back, this old guy named Arch. He tells Arch, Clarence says, "I'm so busy up here in Cleveland with all these rummies that I'm working with." He says, "I want you to come back with me and help me out." You with us? He uses a little ploy there to get him out of that house. And they get in the car and drive back to to Cleveland. Here's the sentence I want you to see. Now, this guy's been months in this house just not drinking, coming apart at the seams. They bring him back on the premise that he's going to start working with some other drunks, going to help Clarence, help some cats get sober. The next day, Art seems somewhat different. Arch got so busy in AA in Cleveland that he appeared to change right before Clarence's eyes. Arch went to hospitals and dry out places, helping drunks all over the place. He got so busy and so far in over his head that he forgot all about his fears and phobias. Surprisingly, he became a big asset to Clarence and became one of the boys. He eventually went back to Akron a new man. Within a few months, he returned to Grosse Pointe and started the first AA meeting in Detroit. Now, what changed Arch? What changed Arch? Hiding out in some house someplace, not drinking and drugging one stupid day at a time? No. What changed Arch was getting off his ass, getting off his butt, and trying to help another drunk. And immediately, he began to get better. That's what happened to me, folks. I told you the story last night. I'm 7 years, and I'm not getting any better, and I'm coming apart at the seams, and I can't stop thinking about all these stupid issues that are going on in my life. And I'm going into meetings, and I want to talk about it. And they said, "No, Chris, we're not going to do that. We're going to talk about God and the steps. We're going to show you how to go work with others, do 12-step calls." I don't want to do that. I want to get this stuff straightened out, and then I'll do your 12-step call. No, you're going to go do the 12-step call now with us, and then we'll talk about that. All right. You know what happens though? I got so busy working with drunks and helping people and getting out of myself and involved in service work that I forgot all about that chicken shit stuff. And I had that spiritual experience. There was so much power left over in my life after the obsession was lifted. I had power to deal with every one of these things. The book says that I'm going to recover and be given the ability to help others. And you guys don't get that. You think you got sober just so you could go out there and be a nice guy? No. God's allowed you to get sober so that you could turn around and help somebody else. That's our primary purpose. I want to read you something real quick and we'll close this down. Some of y'all are looking like you need a smoke. I need sleep too. I don't know where this jet lag has got me. I don't. It's going to be fun back at work on Monday. I can tell. I'll sleep. Here's something I want to close with. It's something I want to, a point I want to try to make, and I want to do it very delicately because I'm very clear, having been around the fellowship for so long, and I'm 16 years sober. It was years in and out the fellowship before that, and I understand that so many of us in this room have been hurt in other ways besides alcoholism and drug addiction. Troubles of our own making, perhaps. I understand that. Many of us have placed ourselves in the positions to be hurt. And many of us have been in very, very, very tragic relationships. I don't know what it is about alcoholics and addicts. I don't know what it was. If God could put 10 of the finest women in the world and I would walk over them to get to the one psychopath behind them. It's like my picker's broke. My picker is broke. Yeah, okay. But I understand that a lot of this stuff has happened, and sometimes when I speak from the podium, especially when people get CDs and they listen to this stuff out of context, they think what I'm doing is making light of that. I'm not one of these guys saying, "Why don't you just get over it?" Because I'm going to tell you something, folks. A lot of stuff that we've been through is not going to be just gotten over with overnight. It's going to take some effort. This is what the 12 steps will help us do also. the 12 steps by looking at an inventory and getting to see clear my part in certain situations, and then seeing some character defects, and then later understanding that I owe some people some amends, and I get to go clean up the wreckage of my past, then I can stop looking over my shoulder, and all of a sudden life becomes a lot easier. But I don't want to forget the things that happened to me. You with us? I mean, people. I hear people all the time, if I could just forget that, if I could just forget. Guys, if you could forget it, then you would be no help to anybody else. Can y'all get down with this? If you can't identify with the pain of another alcoholic and addict, you are never going to be worth a shit in this fellowship. It is that pain of having to walk through. It's like the problem is not your past. The problem is your failure to understand that it is your past. It was quick, wasn't it? But y'all got it. I'm strengthened by my past. I'm not strengthened because I was eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas, folks. I'm strengthened because I walked through that and I got to the other side. See how God works in our lives is that God puts people in our lives that can relate to what we're doing. You know how that stuff goes. Crystal, you've seen this 1,000 times. You sit in a meeting and some guy comes up to you and he's like, with me, it's just once I'd like to sponsor somebody that's filthy rich and has no problems with women. You know, but that what kind of experience would I be able to share with that person? Because I have never been filthy rich. I've always struggled with money. You with it? Up until the time I got sober, and I've always had trouble with women. I mean, women are evil, I know, and so are men. I know, it's just we're crazy, and but it's the cat that's going to come up to me and says, "Can I talk to you after the meeting?" And I go, "Hell, here we go," you know. And he's going to sit down and says, "You probably won't be able to relate to this, but I owe the IRS a couple of million dollars, and you know, and here we go. And let me guess, and you're having trouble with women, right?" And he looks and says, "Oh, you do understand. It's how it works. Yes." And buddy, just like I said last night, I've been there and I can show you how to get past it. I can show you how to organize your finances. I can show you how to get your credit back. I can show you because people in this fellowship showed me. But I got through it, folks. I'm going to say this only once. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. Victims don't get sober. If you want to hold on to that, that's your business. Victims don't stay sober. I'm sorry the bad thing happened to you, folks, but if you can get past it and understand it, what it is. We've got this thing that's like a freaking trump card. You know, it's like some of you guys are walking around like this. Hi, my name's Chris Famer. Hi, I was molested. I'm sorry, I thought your name was John. Yeah, it's John. I'm molested. Okay. Let's do lunch sometime. No. And a lot of you guys, and I'm not making fun of that, I'm saying you're using it as a tool to keep yourself away, to separate you from everybody else. Terminal uniqueness is what kills people in our fellowships. Terminal uniqueness is what kills people in our fellowships. Oh, you don't understand. I did more dope than anybody else in this room. You don't understand. I was molested. You don't understand. I went to Vietnam. You don't understand. I'm black. You don't understand. I'm a woman. You don't understand. I'm gay. You don't understand. You're right. I don't understand. You know what I do understand? Powerlessness over this stuff right here. That's what I understand. And that's what I'm going to be able to help you with. But if all you do is hold that trump card at bay, ready to throw it down every time somebody tries to get close to you, you're never going to get this thing. Guys, in order to get sober, Dr. Bob said you've got to have two things going for you. You've got to have some humility, and you've got to have the ability to become responsible. Y'all understand that? Humility is not sitting up here from the podium saying, "Well, I don't know how this shit works." It's ridiculous. Of course I know how it works. I listen to people all the time in the guise of humility. "I just don't know. One day at a time I've managed to do..." Horse shit. Rubbish. Would you tell the newcomer something they can sink their teeth into? Would you show them one step after another how to work this so they can have this spiritual experience? That's not humility. Humility is knowing that what I'm saying up here comes from God. What I'm saying up here comes from my love of you. The hardest thing in the world for people to say in our fellowships is not "I love you." We say it like we've got a bunch of goddamn minor birds. It's "I don't know." That's humility. You come talk to me about something. You were hurt as a child. You've been raped. You've been molested. And you want to talk to me about it. I need to be able to tell you point blank, "I'm sorry. I don't understand that. But I know this lady over here that's been through it, and maybe she can help you." Hallelujah for that. Yeah. hallelujah for that. I don't have to be Mr. Answer Man and know everything. That's humility. And responsibility, when the hand of Cocaine Anonymous reaches out, by God, you better be there. And if that's at 10 o'clock at night, too bad. 3 o'clock in the morning, too bad. The program has given me the best days I've ever had, but thinking about all the time lost still sometimes brings me down. You with us? This is that inability to get past the past. Telling the difference between yesterday, today, and tomorrow may be easy for most people, but it isn't for many of us. Our past tends to overshadow both the present and the future. Until we learn to draw a line between then and now, the gloom of what was expands and spreads like noxious smoke or a sickening odor. What can be is blotted out. Where does yesterday end and today begin? For us, that may be the central recovery issue. Our battle is one of boundaries. Here it is. No matter how spoiled the past may have been, our future is spotless. If in our minds we say goodbye to the past, we can begin writing a new story and painting a new picture. Jesus, guys, how cool is that? It means this quite simply, as I tear up again. I can start right now today being the person that God wanted me to be. Or I can continue to make excuses for why I can't be that person. And growing up, folks, and doing new things is scary. Learning to rollerblade at 35 years old was frightening. Y'all understand that? Learning to talk to a woman straight, sober, was terrifying. Learning to get married, learning to raise kids, learning to ride bicycles, learning to do all the cool things, to paint that first picture, to do that first piece of sculpture. You got every voice in your head saying, you're a worthless piece of shit, you're a burned out drug addict. I'm a burned out drug addict, folks, who's been given a new lease on life and the ability to try some new things. It's the trying that's tough. It takes courage. It takes the help of everybody in the fellowship. You want to start a new business? There's people in your rooms, buddy, that are ready to help you do it. You want to try a relationship one more time? See if it'll... There's people in these rooms that can show you how to do it. Plenty of people in these rooms that will show you how to do it. Deal is to keep putting one foot in front of the other and doing what we're supposed to do, guys. And bless every one of you. I've got this printed stuff. You guys that are not readers, don't bother to pick it up because I only brought a little bit. Some of you guys, you're just picking stuff up to have in your hand. Don't. There's not that much. Crystal said he can make copies of some of this stuff later. And I've got some little issue man buttons. And, you know, we wear these little buttons, you know, like this. He's a little issue man. And we take them I wear them in meetings a lot of times because sometimes it's easy for me to get off the page and get in my own issues and be thinking about my own shit. And I got to look down and remember that my disease is internal, not external. And whatever's going on in my life, folks, it takes the back seat over what's going on internally. You can be spiritually fit, folks, and be in a shit storm in your life. We've got this idea that everything has to be going our way before we can be okay. Let me be the first to tell you, welcome to life. You know, and everything is not going to be okay. But you can be okay. And that's the best news I can give you. I love every one of you. Thanks so much for being here.